Hello and welcome to Essential Dissent. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode is part one of the first plenary from the 2024 UNAC conference, held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNAC is the United National Anti-War Coalition. UNAC fights against wars at home and abroad. Their goal is to bring together organizations and movements representing people in struggle today and unify in collective action against the major perpetrator of war and injustice in the world, the United States government, along with its allies and proxies.
I'm Joe Lombardo. I'm the coordinator of UNAC, United National Anti-War Coalition, and I want to welcome you all to this conference here. We were actually a little concerned about doing a conference in Minneapolis. We knew it was a real progressive area with strong anti-war movement, that with a lot of folks that related to UNAC and the anti-imperialist message that we tried to bring to the anti-war movement, but we had never done a conference in the Midwest before, didn't know how it was going to go, didn't know how many people were going to register, didn't know how many people were going to come. We got a huge registration. There'll be more people coming tonight. There'll be more people coming tomorrow. And I think we're going to have a wonderful conference. We organized this conference with meetings, not just of the leadership of UNAC, but of organizations that relate to UNAC and that we work with. And we had biweekly meetings building up to the conference and then weekly meetings as we got closer. And I think that kind of democratic effort to put together the conference is really paying off and will pay off. Some of the key people who are here and who work to do it are Danica Katovich from Code Pink, Chris Mann from the Green Party Peace Action Committee, Cody Urban from Resist US-Led Wars and the International League for People's Struggle, Jeff Mackler, Margaret Kimberly, who I think was still on her way. There was an earthquake in New York. Chris Hilali, many others. But the real heroes of organizing this were Sarah Flounders from International Action Coalition, Sarah Martin from WAM, Women Against Military Madness, and Wyatt Miller from the Minneapolis Anti-War Coalition. As I'm sure you're aware, the conference is happening at a pivotal time in world history. In Palestine, you know, there have been genocides in the world before, but this one we have been witnessing on our TV screens, on our computers, on our phones, despite the fact that the corporate media tries to hide the facts, it's been impossible. And millions of people around the world have come out to protest Israelis' genocide against the Palestinian people. The anti-war movement is being built as we speak around the world and in the United States. Zionism and imperialism have been exposed like never before and have been isolated like never before in the world. The US and Israel have voted virtually alone against a ceasefire. Even some of their allies could not do that. And they couldn't do it because their own populations are saying, enough, we are human beings, we can't allow this to happen. We can't allow our politicians to take the side of Israel. And so the United States and Israel have been very isolated. In the United Nations, they voted alone. But it's not just what's going on in Israel and Palestine today. the consciousness raising that has happened among the populations, the millions of people. Though I live in the United States, I've been in Britain for a while. They've held marches in London of 800,000 people. It's a country one-sixth the size of the United States. And at the same time, there were demonstrations in cities across that country. The police tried to give them leaflets to say, these are the chants you could do. You can't say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That became the major chant of the demonstrations. In Ukraine, the US and NATO are badly losing, creating a political and economic crisis throughout Europe and the United States. The world is changing. So it's an important time to hold this conference, to evaluate where we are, where our movement is, where we are going, and where we need to go next. Today is also Al-Quds Day. There are demonstrations all around the world for Palestine today. Yesterday was NATO's 75th anniversary. They were formed in 1947. They will meet to celebrate their 75th anniversary in Washington, D.C. in July, and we will be there to meet them. Yesterday was also the date in 1967 that Martin Luther King gave his famous speech at Riverside Church on the Vietnam War, where he came out against the Vietnam War. 1 year later, in 1968, on yesterday's date, he was assassinated, probably for giving that speech. I think it was 1918, on yesterday's date, in recognition of what that speech in Riverside Church, that the Black Alliance for Peace, a very important organization, a member of UNAC, was founded. And in a minute, you'll hear their founder and one of their national leaders. So it is the right time to be holding this conference, and Minneapolis-St. Paul is clearly the right place. I hope this weekend you can meet new people, you can network, you could learn, you could teach, and you can get fired up for the important work that we all have ahead of us. I'm going to introduce next Jamu Baraka, one of the central leaders and founders of the Black Alliance for Peace and a member of the UNAC Administrative Committee.
All power to the people. All power to the people. This call that we make is not a call just as an empty slogan, but it reflects a historic objective. It reflects the kind of objective we all have to strive for, because without power being residing with the people, we can't make any kind of changes. So we have to remind ourselves why we are here, why we in fact struggle. And so this evening, this is going to be sort of the beginning of a celebration, if you will. As Joe just indicated, we are here at a very historic moment. There's something different this evening than in any of the past UNAC conferences, in my opinion. Why? Because we are facing a situation that suggests to many of us that there's no turning back in terms of the intensification of the anti-imperialist movement here in this country. The fact that we have been imposed on, if you will, to be complicit to a certain extent in the barbarity, the savagery that we have witnessed in Gaza. It is a situation that is dehumanizing, but like most social processes, there's a contradictory element here. That is, it provides us an opportunity to ensure that people understand the true nature not only of Gaza and the savagery we see in Gaza, but also the true nature of the Western imperial project. That while the project has been able to give itself a era of respectability, using ideological instruments like humanitarian interventionism and the responsibility to protect. What Gaza has done, my friends, is to expose the true nature of this project. It has shown us that basically these forces are prepared to blow up the entire world in order to maintain their global hegemony. So what does that say for us? It means that we can no longer allow for innocence. We have a responsibility to lay out in clear, unequivocal terms what we're up against and to begin to advance a vision of what needs to be constructed. So we have to call out the enemy for what the enemy really is. We say in UNAC, we say in the Black Alliance for Peace, that what we are up against is a pan-European, colonial, capitalist, white supremacist patriarchy, and it must be defeated. Now, we recognize that we have different tendencies here at UNAC, and that's a good thing. One of the things, though, we have to talk about, folks, is in terms of eliminating innocence, is for people to begin to understand and for us to articulate this. And that is that the enemy is not motivated just because of some kind of connection or some kind of commitment to evil. The enemy has a material objective. And that objective is to maintain global hegemony, to maintain objectively, if you will, white power. And so it's not about convincing these forces to do the right thing. It's understanding the motivations that are driving their policies. That's incredibly important, because when you understand that that is the objective, then you won't find yourself being diverted with all kinds of unimportant diversionary arguments as to how we change consciousness. We understand that material force can only be overthrown by material force, and that has to be understood. So my friends, this weekend, we need to discuss and to debate, but we also have to be absolutely honest in terms of what we're up against. If we're not able to organize ourselves and engage in more effective coordination, then we will find ourselves in a situation where we can not see the end of 2024. Now, that's not, in my opinion, a dramatic statement, in the sense that, you know, we have to make sure people understand not only the complexity of the global moment, but the danger of this moment. That with the amateurs making policy in the U.S., with Anthony Blinken saying just a couple of days ago, once again, that Ukraine will be part of NATO. It's quite clear that these folks are driving policies that could very well end up in a nuclear confirmation, a nuclear confrontation that none of us are going to be able to survive. And so we have to be honest with the people. Again, we have to hope that people can understand, and we have to help them to understand the nature of this moment and what we have to do. So this evening, this weekend, we will discuss, we will debate. But even with all of the challenges that we are facing, we also want to remind ourselves that with the people organized, with power shifting from the enemy to the people, then there's always the possibility of success, always the possibility of human transformation. And that as revolutionaries, as anti-imperialists, our responsibility is to embody that positiveness, to advance the vision of what we can be, and to advance that vision with boldness and confidence. So my friends, thank you all for coming out this evening, coming out this weekend, and let's keep at the forefront of our awareness the historic responsibility we have going forward to not only win this short-term struggle, but win the struggle to transform ourselves and to transform our realities and to build a new world. All power to the people.
Well, we're going to hear from Nick Estes tonight, who is a leader of the Red Nation, an author and activist, but he's stuck in Canada somewhere. So we're not going to hear from him tonight, but we're going to hear from a couple of other important speakers. We're going to have a panel of some of the organizers right here from the Twin Cities area, from the Palestine movement that have come together in a coalition. But before that, we're going to hear from two people, briefly from Remy Schuler, if you could come up, and Hussam Marajda. I don't know if I got their names correctly, who are going to explain to us a little bit about actions that are being planned, which this conference will be asked to endorse on our final plenary session at the two war parties, imperialist war parties in this country. They're known as the Democratic and Republican parties that will be holding conventions, and we're going to be there also. So.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, Republicans have got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Republicans have got to go. All right, sounds great. Thank you, everyone. And the Democrats, yeah. Oh, we'll get to that. So my name is Remy. I am the medic chair of the Coalition to March on the RNC 2024 and the outreach co-chair of the Milwaukee Anti-War Committee. So, show of hands, who here hates Republicans? This better be everybody. Who here hates Democrats? All right. Well, you're in luck because we are marching on both of them in Milwaukee and Chicago this year. So, as most of you may know, the RNC is coming to Milwaukee on July 15th. And as you may also know, we at the Coalition to March on the RNC will be marching right up to their doorstep and let them know that they are not welcome in our city. The RNC committee and the city of Milwaukee are doing what they can to keep us far away from the convention, drafting a parade route with a speaking stage a half mile away that the Milwaukee Police Department has full control over. We say, and I apologize if this isn't family friendly, that. We demand our own permit to march on our own terms. Whose streets?
Our streets.
Whose city?
Our city?
That's right. All right, many, if not all of the organizations here have been fighting tooth and nail in support for the Palestinian resistance. As anti-war organizations, this has been the forefront of our work and will be until we see a free Palestine in our lifetime. Standing with Palestine is one of the central demands within the coalition. And if your organization stands with these demands, I better hear some noise. So here's our demands for the coalition to march on the RNC. Fight the racist and reactionary agenda of the Republican Party. Defend women and reproductive rights. Demand peace, justice, and equity for all. And stand with Palestine. In case you haven't seen the flyers around yet and haven't been bugged by me or other Milwaukee Anti-War Committee people, y'all may know we also have an anti-war contingent in development to bring the fight right to the most vile, reactionary elements of U.S. imperialism. In this contingent, we have our own list of demands. End U.S. aid to Israel. Down with U.S. warmongering. Sovereignty for indigenous nations. And planet over profit. We welcome all organizations attending this conference today to join the Coalition to March on the RNC and join the anti-war contingent. Since we're in Minnesota, we would love to see a real show of solidarity from y'all. Come out in buses, fly out, pack your friends and comrades in a bus, and enjoy a nice scenic summertime Milwaukee with our terrible roads and a million bars. But seriously, I think I speak for everyone here from Milwaukee today when I say we would love to see each and every one of you out with us on July 15th to march against the RNC and the Republicans. If you're interested in joining, you can find me or other Milwaukee folks to sign up. There's a QR code on some anti-war contingent flyers, which you'll be seeing around. I'll be here all weekend, so you know where to find me. And then I'm going to end on just a couple of chants, as we like to do in Milwaukee. So, from Palestine to the Philippines, end the U.S. war machine. From Palestine to the Philippines,
end the U.S. war machine.
From Palestine to the Philippines,
end the U.S. war machine.
From the river to the sea,
Palestine will be free.
From the river to the sea,
Palestine will be free.
Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Good evening, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Hussam Marajda. I am the co-chair of the Chicago chapter of the United States Palestinian Community Network. I'm honored to be here speaking on the stage. I'm gonna share with a lot of brilliant people this weekend. So thank you for inviting USPCN, and thank you for all you've done for Palestine in the past, I should say, not only 6 months, I know some of you have been around in the fight for decades, so thank you, solidarity. So, RNC, Milwaukee, July 15th, and then we have the March on the DNC in Chicago on August 19th, okay? It's gonna be busy in the Midwest this summer. So, we want you all to come out to both of these things. We want you all to come out August 19th to the DNC as well. In addition, next week in Chicago, we do have a one-day conference. One-day conference on Saturday. There's the card for it. So we have a bunch on the anti-war Minnesota committee table. But if you want one, just you could also find me, and I'll give you one as well. So this card is, please pick it up. This is for next week's conference. So if you can, come out to Chicago next week for this conference. That's going to be it's going to be talking about the march on the DNC. And it's going to be giving updates, and we're going to talk about our fights and our demands. Okay, so we have a little bit, a slightly different struggle in Chicago. We did apply for a permit, and they denied us the permit. Shame. They're trying to give us an alternative route that is 4 miles away from United Center. Whoa. Yes, and so we actually filed a federal lawsuit against them. Against the city of Chicago. We have to make it clear to the Democrats that their bullshit is no longer accepted. Right. It is. Biden didn't win because he was, you know, he's great or smart. That's not the reason. Biden won because the movement put him there in 2020. The movement that showed up. Back off the momentum of the uprising, the George Floyd uprising. That's why. And so they can't get away with it anymore. They can't get away with this. And so we're making it very clear. We're not voting for Biden this year. And we're going to march on the DNC. And just to make it even more clear, people are going to come out, if Biden loses, people are going to come out and blame the Palestinians. The only people blamed if Biden loses are the Democrats and Biden themselves. We gotta come out strong for the RNC in July, and we gotta come out very strong, you know, for the DNC in August as well. Will I see you there?
Yes.
We gotta see you there, okay? I'll see you there. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention our demands. Palestine, at the top of it, liberation for Palestine, from the river to the sea. Stop police crimes and community control of the police. Defend LGBTQ, women's and reproductive rights. Defend immigrant rights and demand legalization for all undocumented workers. Money for jobs, schools, healthcare, housing, and environment, not for war. Support the right to unionize and strike. These are our demands.
You're listening to Essential Dissent. This episode is part one of the first plenary from the 2024 UNAC conference, held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNAC is the United National Anti-War Coalition.
Okay, you know what our agenda is for this summer. You know, all around the country, the struggle of the Palestinian people, the heroic struggle against this genocide, the deaths that we have seen of children, of civilians, the horror that the entity known as Israel has imposed upon the Palestinian people has moved the movement like never before. There's coalitions everywhere. I live in upstate New York, Albany, New York, small place. There's now a huge coalition of all the different groups and individuals that we had never seen before in the movement coming together to fight all the time for the Palestinian people and against this genocide. UNAC puts out an email. We have an email list for New York City. Sometimes in New York City, there's 10 or 12 actions in a day for Palestine. Something happening at one college, groups taking over the train station, marching in the streets in the Bronx, all over. And some of those people are here that have been organizing that. There's a similar coalition in this area in the Twin Cities. And now, if those folks would like to come up, we're going to hear from members of the Twin City Free Palestine Coalition and doing a panel. So,
free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
From the river to the sea. Okay, just wanted to ground us for a bit. Thank you to the Anti-War Committee for organizing this incredible conference. My name is Yasmin Hirsi. I'm an organizer in the Twin Cities and currently work with the Reviving Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. I'm really grateful to be here with you all to continue to conspire and build movements that are rooted in ending the U.S.'s ruling class and its interest in maintaining its colonial power projects all over the world, including here, which must end now. To ground us a little bit about what the panel is going to be focusing on, the Free Palestine Coalition is an effort to mobilize the American public and pressure elected officials to demand an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, an end to U.S. military aid to Israel, a restoration of humanitarian aid, and an end to Israel's illegal siege on Gaza. Our coalition is led by Palestinians and believes that Palestinians do not have to do anything to deserve a long, peaceful life. Our demands are simple. Immediate end to Israel's war and occupation. Let Gaza live. End U.S. aid to Israel. End Minnesota investment in Israel's companies, weapons manufacturers, and Israel's bonds, and a right of return for all Palestinians. The coalition is made up of over 20 organizations at this point, and just to name a few, we have American Muslims for Palestine, National Lawyers Guild, Christmas Carolers for a Ceasefire, Jews Against Genocide, Party for Socialism and Liberation, Jewish Voice for Peace, Council American Islamic Relations, Climate Justice Committee, Freedom Road Socialist Org, U of M N Flags JP, Educators for Justice in Palestine, Minnesota Abortion Action Committee, and the list goes on and on and on. Yes, incredible coalition of groups. We have all been brought together for Palestine and have emerged as a broad coalition that is behind a shared understanding that in the broader fight against exploitation of the working class, supporting the self-determination of all peoples oppressed around the world, and in ending the funding of state-sanctioned violence both here and in Israel by seeing a free Palestine, inshallah. By the demand of the Palestinian people, we as free people here in the United States, or the so-called United States, have an obligation to pressure the American government and make sure not another cent goes to arm Israel in its violent genocide against Palestinians. So with that, I am absolutely honored to introduce these fellow comrades on the panel who will share more about that work and the collective effort for a better, more just world and what that actually means. There will be an opportunity at the end for Q&A, so please hold on to those for the end. And then we will be breaking at 7:45 to break our fast for those that are fasting. So Meredith Abbey is a co-founder of the Minnesota Anti-War Committee, which is organizing a campaign to get the state of Minnesota to divest from companies that support apartheid state Israel. Anthony Taylor Gouget is a member of the Minnesota Workers United, which is a group of rank and file union members and workers fighting for workers' rights. Humberto Martin is with the Twin Cities Coalition for Justice, which is an organization working on bringing community control of the police in Minneapolis. Dunya is the co-president of Students for Justice in Palestine at the University of Minnesota and has been involved in the Palestine movement since middle school. Jillian Rath is a member of the Twin Cities chapter of Students for a Democratic Society and has organized around a number of different grassroots campaigns, including a fight for a free Palestine. Latifa Moss is a member of the Minnesota Immigrants' Right Action Committee, which is a grassroots organization dedicated to equality for all aspects in life for immigrants, end of deportations and ICE detentions, and anti-immigrant laws. So please give a warm welcome to these incredible panel members, and I'll pass it off to Meredith to start us off.
How many of you are not from Minnesota? Will you raise your hand? Nice. Well, welcome to Minnesota. We're really excited to have you here. We're really excited to have this opportunity to be able to share some of the lessons that we have here locally in our Palestine work. We've been having, as the Free Palestine Coalition, a minimum of one protest per week since October 7th. On October 15th, we hit a mile marker of 15,000 people at our protest in Minneapolis, which is the largest Palestine action we've ever had in the Twin Cities. And it became the largest protest we had had since the uprising after the murder of George Floyd. And so this momentum caused us to form the Free Palestine Coalition, as Yasmin introduced. And it also got the attention of many members of the Minneapolis City Council who came out to multiple protests. And tonight I wanted to talk about our work to get a ceasefire resolution passed by the Minneapolis City Council and then the St. Paul City Council. And the person that would be the best person to speak about this is Sanaa Wazwaz, who's with American Muslims for Palestine. And unfortunately, she had a Ramadan event tonight and can't be here. So I'm going to do my best to be as awesome and as inspiring as Sanaa. And you'll just have to bear with me. So historically in Minnesota, we have targeted our senators, but after years of ignoring us and because the situation is so dire, we started expanding who we were willing to sort of like try to pressure. I mean, obviously the federal government has a great responsibility for this for what's going on, right? They could end U.S. aid to Israel today, right? They could stop sending weapons, but unfortunately, Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith are super double not interested in doing anything. We've also, as the anti-war committee, been trying to pressure the State Board of Investment. There are four decision makers on the State Board of Investment: the governor, the attorney general, the state auditor, and the secretary of state. And they have the ability to divest the state of Minnesota from Israeli bonds and from Israeli companies and from major weapons manufacturers like Lockheed Martin. And they haven't done nothing. And we've been going to them for years. And Anthony is going to talk more about that campaign. But what we decided to do was to really look at, okay, we have a whole other level of government that we've never done this type of pressure work with, right? I've been doing foreign policy activism for 20 years, and I've never pressured the city council to do that, right? I've spent most of my career trying to pressure the Congress to do things. And so this gave us an opportunity because we were like, these people aren't listening to us. So we decided to join the national movement to try to persuade our city council to join with the other city councils across the country who had already signed on to ceasefire resolutions. And so our first battle that we realized is that in order to work on this campaign, we really needed to address the $25 million question, which is, why is Palestine a local issue? Because so often what we got told directly was, this is not a local issue. This is an issue you should be talking about with your senators. Please go away. And so we had to be like, no, we are not going away. This actually is a local issue. And so this is something that we had to work on. We had to talk about it in our call-in day actions, in our literature, in our speeches. But we really had to hammer home the idea that actually Palestine is a local issue. And we talked about it with people. We really hammered home the fact that, like, this is a local issue because we are paying for this genocidal massacre with our tax dollars, yep,
at the national level, at the state level. And like, we have always had this demand in the local peace movement, and I'm sure in your peace movements as well, say money for human needs and not for war. And it's like, we've got real problems here in our country, but we're spending money killing people we've never met before. That's ridiculous. And so we got to talk about the trade-offs that are happening, about how we don't have money to pay for college, for student loan debt. We don't have money to pay for our public schools, but we do have money to spend, you know, killing people in other countries. And matter of fact, we should be having a real, like, heart-to-heart. Like, is this really what we stand for as a country? And so we got to use this as a way to talk about the fact that we should instead be investing in our children and our healthcare and our housing. And particularly when we were campaigning in St. Paul, we talked about the roads. The roads in St. Paul are awful. I might be a Minneapolitan, so I can say that, but whatever. We also talked about the fact that this is a local issue because our community includes many Palestinians, Arabs, and Muslims for whom this is a very real and personal issue. People in Minneapolis and St. Paul are concerned about their family members. And so to say that this is a foreign issue is to ignore the very diversity of Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's to say that we don't have Palestinians living in our own community, which is a bold-faced lie. That's not true. This is also a local issue because although I don't believe that we have actual weapons being made in Minnesota, we have weapons manufacturers that are open and do design work here in Minnesota, whether or not that's at General Dynamics in Bloomington, Lockheed Martin here in St. Paul, or we were just at Base Systems in Maple Grove. But the fact is that our tax dollars repeatedly are being given away to these companies to build these buildings here, as happened at Base Systems in Maple Grove and happened this just last year in St. Paul with Lockheed Martin. But the fact is that we are subsidizing these very weapons manufacturers that are killing people in Palestine. And so that is a local issue. And then lastly, it's important to look at the fact that hate crimes are rising across this country against Arab and Muslim people. And specifically, we've had multiple mosques in the Twin Cities that have been attacked and vandalized. And so it's important to say, look, you expect us to think that you're here to take care of our constituents. Well, these are your constituents. We have a large Muslim and Somali community here in the Twin Cities. You should be doing things to try to protect your constituents. And so and then our last argument was, you tell us that this is a federal issue. Well, the federal government isn't listening to us. And so therefore, you don't get to not listen to us too, because we know where you live, and we know where you work, and we know you, and you're gonna do this for us, and we're gonna make you do it. And so we did. We have some advantages as Minneapolis. First of all, we have a large and strong Somali population that is a key constituency in city politics, and they overwhelmingly support this issue. We had a member of our movement who is Muslim on the city council, and she listened to us, and she wrote city council resolution with us, and particularly wrote it with Sanaa Wazwaz from American Muslims for Palestine, and really took that idea of there should be Palestinian leadership on what this language should look like. We had the power of our movement. Like, literally, we've been having protests of thousands of people for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And so they knew we had a real base. They knew we had a real constituency of people that they needed to listen to. And lastly, one of the reasons why I wanted to organize this panel tonight is our coalition represents what Minneapolis looks like. We had immigrant rights groups, we had police brutality groups, we had student groups, we had various different Muslim groups. We had all these different constituencies that look like Minneapolis that are part of our coalition to say, this is something that your constituents want, need, and are insisting upon you doing, and to do it now. There's some things that we're really proud of in the Free Palestine Coalition, and one is the language that we got passed. The first is that the resolution that was passed really starts with the historical context with 75 years ago. Our resolution does not start with October 7th, because this issue did not start with October 7th. This resolution refers to genocide in multiple places. It does not skirt around what is really going on. It calls it that this is a genocide that is happening, and we were pressured by the mayor's office, and we were pressured by other members of the city council to take that word out, and we won that battle and said, no, we are not pretending that this is not a genocide. Additionally, the resolution goes further than many other cities, and it calls for a full, immediate, and permanent ceasefire and for an end to U.S. military funding to the State of Israel and for the release of thousands of Palestinians held indefinitely without cause in Israeli military prisons. And I believe fundamentally we wouldn't have gotten that victory. And you know, many of you have done this work for decades, and the fact is we don't get many victories. We don't. We don't win very often in the anti-war movement. It's sad. But it's okay. Because when we do win, we really get excited about it. And like, this was a victory for us, and we were really excited, but we wouldn't have gotten that passage, but we also wouldn't have gotten that wording if we wouldn't have had those protests of people. And so when people say to you, do protests matter? I like to tell them the story. Yes, they do matter. Because politicians only do what we make them do, and they only do stuff for us if we show up and make them do it. So this passage created some momentum here in Minnesota. Other resolutions were passed in cities like Hastings and Columbia Heights and Moorhead, and relatively quickly after Minneapolis is passed. And so then we took our battle right here to literally across the street from this hotel to St. Paul City Hall. And St. Paul has an all-women city council, and they have championed themselves as being very progressive. And we were like, this is going to work. We've got this momentum. We just got the best city council resolution passed in the whole country. This is going to be a walk in the park. The city council president is Muslim and Iranian, and she's publicly stated that she's for a ceasefire. This is totally going to work. Wow. We hit a wall. No, she was not down with helping us. As a matter of fact, she was a huge, big impediment to us passing it. And she blocked our efforts to pass it for a month with new excuses each time. It's not a local issue. We were prepped for that one. Then she said, there's a rule that we can't pass foreign policy resolutions. And then there was the whole, you don't have enough votes. And we were like, let's see. Let's have an actual vote. Let's have people go on the record. They didn't want to do that. But so then we had protests, we had call-in days, we were disrupting their meetings. I got to talk about how much I really felt about the issue when they were only having people speak about the zoo, the Como Park Zoo. I then turned it into talking about, you know, the prison that Gaza is. But anyway, we disrupted their meetings and they weren't able to get things done. And so eventually they caved in and they passed unanimously a weak-ass resolution, but they passed one because they were like, you gotta go. We are tired of you here. So we won that one too. And now these resolution battles are happening at Northfield and in Duluth. And that brings me to my last point, which is why do these campaigns for a ceasefire resolution matter? I've had many people say to me, these ceasefire resolutions are just symbolic. These ceasefire resolutions are just an opportunity to suck us into lobbying with politicians. And the fact of the matter is that this doesn't have to turn into a black hole of effort where you just spend your time in backroom conversations with politicians, because that's not how real change happens. Real change happens because you organize protests, because you organize momentum, because you organize people to put on that pressure. But these resolutions were very helpful for us in a couple of ways. One, it broke through the media silence about Palestine. After the first couple of months, the media was not interested in covering our street protests, regardless of how big they were. They had moved on, which is disgusting, because this is a genocide happening. I'm sorry that you don't think this is sexy enough for you, but for whatever reason, they found things like us occupying city council meetings and us arguing with city council members and us showing up with red paint on our hands, they thought that was photogenic and interesting. And so they covered it, and they let us use their newspapers as a platform by which to talk about what's going on in Palestine. They let us use their op-ed pages, where we got op-eds published that we've never been able to get published before, but they gave us news coverage in a way that they had ceased giving it to us. It also gave us an opportunity to talk about Palestine with people in a way that people felt accessible about. For example, I was watching my daughter's hockey game. I think I'm just watching hockey, but no, I'm getting an opportunity to have random people come up to me being like, Meredith, I see you're working on that ceasefire. Will you please explain that to me? And so that's great. I know a lot more about Palestine than I do about what constitutes a call for hockey, even though I've been watching it for like a long time. I still don't understand. That all looks like you just beat the crap out of this other kid. I don't understand why that's a call and that's not a call, but I can totally talk to you about why this is an important issue. And I had conversations with moms while watching hockey games that then turned into phone calls that they made, and it gave them an opportunity to be able to ask a question. And I think it's because we weren't talking about a conflict that was somewhere else. We were talking about an issue that their own city council, that our own city council was addressing, and it gave them an opening by which to ask questions that they really wanted to ask. And I think that's what's important, is that we need to move people forward. And this resolution battle gave us an opportunity to do that. And then also, this resolution battle, because we kept tying it to why is this a local issue, it gave us the opportunity to talk about how our tax dollars are being spent. And I fundamentally do not believe that Americans want their taxpayer dollars to be spent killing children and having them fall under giant buildings of rubble and then be left there. I don't believe that that's what people want to do. I only believe that people let that happen because they are fundamentally ignorant. I don't think that people understand that their taxpayer dollars are paying for those bombs. And so this campaign gave us a way to raise the level of political awareness in this city, and that is fundamentally important and crucial to this battle for a free Palestine, because Americans must understand that they need to look in the mirror. That they need to look in the mirror and see the fact that they are responsible, that we have blood on our hands because our government is doing this, and we have a fundamental responsibility to say no. And this resolution battle gave us a vehicle by which to do that. And so now Minneapolis has joined with more than 100 cities that have passed ceasefire resolutions. These cities include places like Chicago, San Francisco, Atlanta, Detroit, Seattle, and what's important to understand is that all of these cities are essential for a Democrat to get elected president. This momentum was followed up by the uncommitted primary movement, and the Biden administration and his campaign are terrified that they are going to lose as a result of their unconditional support for Israel's genocide. And we need to keep up this momentum between now and August because we need to win. We have a responsibility to keep speaking out. We have a responsibility to keep protesting. And I hope that this weekend will be inspiring for you so that you can go home and keep up protesting and keep those chants going. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Essential Dissent. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode was part one of the first plenary from the 2024 UNAC conference held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNAC is the United National Anti-War Coalition. UNAC fights against wars at home and abroad. Their goal is to bring together organizations and movements representing people in struggle today and unify in collective action against the major perpetrator of war and injustice in the world, the United States government, along with its allies and proxies. You can download this audio for free via radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. Thanks for listening.